The other day, I read an article about olive oil. Apparently, it's rained a lot the last few weeks down in Andalusia, the article said, and so our national olive oil crisis might be over. Prices, the article said, are falling. As a result, speculators are unloading their reserves of oil now, while wholesale prices are still relatively high, which in turn is driving prices down further. Having little else to do that evening, I rushed to my nearest supermarket to check. Had olive oil prices fallen overnight? Nope. Still €9.80 for the store brand Extra Virgin. Maybe it'll take a bit longer for the lower prices to reach the remote Clot neighborhood in Barcelona. But a few days later, I went to Mercadona with Morena. Mercadona is one of Spain's cheapest supermarket chains. If the prices are going to fall anywhere, it's probably there. No luck, though. A liter of extra virgin olive oil costs €9.55. We only needed two things for our Saturday dinner: a liter of oil and a dozen eggs. Total price, €12.17. Unbelievable. But that's not what I want to talk about today. What I really want to talk about is Europe on the warpath. The great rearming. Hey everybody, it's Daniel coming to you from beautiful Barcelona. Welcome back to Spain to Go, the best podcast in the entire multiverse for all things Spain. This is episode 72, Europe Prepares for World War III. Lots of people are blaming the high prices for everything on the war in Ukraine. Meanwhile, the European Union seems to be preparing for war, or at least preparing to prepare. Recently, La Vanguardia reported that the European Commission has proposed that the EU spend more money on defense and less on environmental causes moving forward. They're worried about Russia making territorial claims beyond Ukraine. They're worried about the possible scenario of Donald Trump being reelected and abandoning all the US's allies in NATO. If I were them, I'd also be worried that Biden is 81 years old and can't form a coherent sentence most of the time, and that he still has the nuclear codes. But I digress. There are, in any case, a lot of things to worry about. Anyway, Europe hasn't spent much on defense since World War II ended, the argument goes. So a lot of the weapons are out of date and nobody has much combat experience. We need to restart the war industry just in case. Donald Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, says that war is no longer a concept from the past, that Europe is in a pre-war era and needs to budget for a rearming. Poland's location in the east of Europe, bordering both Ukraine and Russia, presumably makes these things a bit less abstract for them. Here in Iberia, Spanish Supreme Leader Pedro Sanchez agrees we need to do more to help Ukraine, but wants to stop using the word war, as it might make people uncomfortable. At the same time, the bureaucrats up in Brussels want to know when Spain will be able to change over from the old Iberian gauge rail system, apparently to allow an easier movement of troops and arms across borders. The current railway system in Spain uses wider tracks than elsewhere in Europe, which slows down border crossings. Is it time for World War III? Here on my sofa, I don't really know what to think. On the one hand, European people are pretty proud of these almost 80 years of peace they've had since the end of World War II. It's one of the things that makes them think they're more sophisticated than Americans. Americans always going out and getting involved in foreign wars, you know. On the other hand, those years of peace are bound to end eventually. Can Europeans be whipped up into a nationalist frenzy at this point? Or a pan-European regionalist frenzy? Presumably, anything is possible. A couple years ago, we all watched as the governments pushed millions of people to the point of insanity and even beyond over an aggressive seasonal flu. Remember that? I sure do. But let's also remember that it's not 1914 anymore. A lot has happened since young men around Europe joyfully marched off to die in the trenches of previous wars. It's not the same world and not the same people. I wonder if someone will have to take the kids aside and say, "Listen, we know we've been telling you your whole lives that masculinity is toxic and that tolerance and inclusion are the only values that matter. But now we need you all to get over your gender confusion so that we can start handing out rifles." It could happen, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll have a woke military worthy of progressive 21st century powers, with field bathrooms for all genders and free tampons for everyone, just like in Canada. Only time will tell. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I really want to talk about is George Washington, a man who needs no introduction. Speaking of wars, I'm about 22 hours into the audiobook for Ron Chernow's biography of George Washington, entitled Washington, A Life. It's interesting. Talking about a different time with a different sort of people, look no further than Washington and his friends in colonial America. The disease and death everywhere, the hunger, the grinding war of attrition. Those guys and gals were practicing stoicism at a pretty high level. Badly paid farmer militiamen getting through Pennsylvania and New Jersey winters without adequate food, clothing, or blankets, leaving bloody footprints in the snow because their feet were wrapped in rags instead of boots. The book is full of such details. And through it all, Washington tried to have principles and to do things democratically, begging the new Congress for money and preventing his men from going out and just taking food from civilians. After the Continental victory in the war, when he was revered by all as an American demigod, instead of doing the normal thing and staying on as military dictator or proclaiming himself king, he retired to his farm, hoping never to be called back to public life. There's a lot I could say about this book, but let's just take one point today. Most countries don't get better following a revolution. Actually, they tend to get worse. Just look at what happened after the French Revolution in 1789, or check out my article about the Soviets in 1917. There's those pesky Russians again. The U.S., though, did pretty well after winning the war against the British, and I think the reason is we had guys with some integrity running the show. They weren't perfect, of course, but they don't seem to have been in it purely for selfish gain either. If Europe or the U.S. had more leaders of Washington's caliber, I'd be less worried about the future. But that's not what I really want to talk about. What I really want to talk about is doubling down on the Stoic virtues. About a year and a half ago, on the occasion of my 40th birthday, I wrote an article about the Stoic virtues. The big four are wisdom, justice, courage, and discipline, in case you're keeping track. That article is also a podcast episode, if you'd like to listen to it. I believe it is episode 29. I have been busy this past year and a half. Anyway, the four Stoic virtues: wisdom, justice, courage, and discipline. Those all seemed like pretty good ideas the week that I turned 40, and since then I've gotten married, stopped drinking, and become even more interested in developing some virtue. Looking back, it occurs to me that I've been pursuing external goals my whole life, getting good grades in school, working my ass off to survive in the adult world, and then struggling to get by as an illegal immigrant after I moved to Spain, chasing after some girl, trying to get a work permit, trying to earn some money, chasing after some other girl, trying to be successful as a writer, etc. Most of this wasn't entirely a waste at the time I was doing it, but at my current age, it mostly seems like a series of empty pursuits and existential dead ends. In other words, I seem to have mostly lost interest in the hedonic treadmill. More sensible people advise me, at this point, to just find a bigger hedonic treadmill to jump on and ride those dopamine waves forever higher. But I've never been sensible. Who knows? I might end up as a hermit or dedicating my life to the service of Lord Krishna. Or I might end up fighting off drones in a war against the great enemies of Europe. Either way, it's time to double down on my search for the good life. And the good life, as I understand it, has little to do with the values of consumer society. Arthur C. Brooks over in The Atlantic has an article about Carl Jung's 5 pillars of a good life. To paraphrase a bit, they are as follows. 1. Good physical and mental health. 2. Good relationships. 3. A reasonable standard of living and satisfactory work. 4. Finding beauty in art and nature. And 5. A faith or philosophy that fosters resilience. Seems like as good a list as any, and that word resilience seems especially important. So much of the current vibe in Western cultures seems to be about finding new reasons to be offended and expecting everybody else on the planet to follow some long list of rules in order to avoid hurting your feelings. And that's just not a practical plan. In the real world, people are sometimes going to be assholes, and life is going to be a series of obstacles, insults, and disappointments, at least partially. Wishing it were otherwise, or hoping for some future utopia where everyone is fully decent and life is easy all the time, is just a recipe for further suffering, the suffering of unmet, impossible expectations. So let's practice some courage and some discipline, and let's have the wisdom to do the right thing, even or especially in difficult and uncertain times. Let's live good lives off the hedonic treadmill and hope we can still afford eggs and olive oil when World War III comes. That's all I've got for today. Next stop, Madrid. More on that in a future podcast. I hope you're doing well wherever you are in the world. I had this article in my drafts for a while, but I woke up this morning to the shocking news that Pedro Sanchez might resign as president/prime minister. I've never liked Sanchez, so this should have brought me some joy, but mostly I thought about the fact that I called him Spanish Supreme Leader in here, and if I didn't publish this soon, the whole joke might be irrelevant. Anyway, like I said in my recent article and podcast about why Americans love Spain, that is episode 70, I believe. Politics out here is a shit show, and Sanchez's reasons for thinking about resignation seem to be more of that. It's another corruption thing, this time involving his wife. The case, as I have understood it so far, seems to be very flimsy, but usually Spanish politicians tend to keep their spouses and significant others out of the public eye, but recently that's not been working very well for any of them on either the right or the left. Sanchez seems at the very least to be a good political survivor, so I'm guessing he'll hang in there. I don't know, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's just gonna quit to me. Also, like I said, the case against his wife seems pretty flimsy so far, so I'm thinking we'll have Sanchez for as long as Sanchez wants to be there. But you never know, we will find out. He said he's gonna take a few days to think about it. He's cleared his agenda, his public, you know, agenda, and we're waiting. We'll see. Interesting times, as usual, here in Spain and everywhere else. I hope you're stocking reasonably priced olive oil substitutes in your World War III bunker. Remember, you can render fat from any sort of animal that you want. Beef tallow may be an underrated source of calories in the near future. Does Amazon Prime do deliveries to front lines in wars? I don't know. I guess we might find that out sooner or later as well. Head over to the web expatmadrid.com for a lot more Spain stuff. You could also check out my YouTube channel, Learn Spanish with Daniel. All episodes of the podcast are now on YouTube, and I've also got several dozen videos about Spanish culture, Spanish language, grammar, etc. I try to make things simple and easy to understand, so check that out, Learn Spanish with Daniel. The podcast is on the same channel. Give me a like, subscribe to the podcast, wherever it is you're listening. Give me some stars or write a review if you can. Everything helps. You could also go to expatmadrid.com/donate and send a few bucks my way. I appreciate it. You could send €3, you could send €300. Any amount helps. expatmadrid.com/donate. One thing I'm sure we will not be having in the near future is lower taxes. So you can help me out with my dealings with Spanish Hacienda. Anyway, it's been great. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. And from beautiful Barcelona, hasta la próxima. Bye.